Hey guys, first of all, I want to apologize for it being so long since I made any content. We had a death in the family that was kind of catastrophic, we took it really hard. So anyway, I wanted to get into this because I recently stumbled on this article that is relevant to this older video that I made that is probably one of the most important videos I've ever done, and it's relevant to that. And this one was the video I did that was basically about what science says about social justice warrior strategies for activism literally cause hatred and bigotry. And I stumbled on this article that was like a personification of that. I will leave a link to this video in the cards at the end. If you guys haven't seen this video, I strongly urge you to check it out, because it's not even a matter of opinion that what the social justice inquisition is doing literally leads to more of the problem they claim they're addressing. Initially, when I saw this, I was hoping this would be an article where somebody realized that what they were doing or how they were thinking about things was wrong. Unfortunately, that's not the case. But of course, on the Huffington Post, I confronted a white man in my gym. What I realized in that moment left me shaken. Quote, how did I become this person? I asked myself. And basically, this is an article about a guy who lives in a neighborhood that he considers to be gentrified, a black male individual, apparently also gay. And gentrification is an interesting conversation, because if white people leave an area, they call it white flight. And apparently that's, you know, fueled by racism. And then if white people come back to an area and start to live there, then it's gentrification. Like, you'll notice that when people get really deep into this racial stuff, there's really no right answer for their hated group. Like, there's no way that they're even allowed to exist. They can't do X, or they shouldn't exist, and they can't do B, or they shouldn't exist, etc. Like, there's no right answer for the people that you've been driven to hate. You know, but in any case, he goes on to describe, you know, his experience, you know, being at a gym that he usually goes to. And I mean, let's just get into it here. You know, he's like, I started questioning the relationship during the pandemic. One day I was on the Stairmaster doing my thing when a black gym employee approached a white guy on the treadmill in front of me and told him to pull his mask back up. He gave her a quick glance, slowly tugged the fabric, then returned his focus to running. There was something about the look I saw him give her, entitlement, dismissal, invisibility. It triggered an overwhelming urge in me to wipe the smugness off his face. And the guy's like, just let that mask fall down again. Like, he's just chomping at the bit for the opportunity to confront this guy. He says, it wasn't even about him or the mask, I now realize, but about all the black people who've disappeared. Bed-stuy in 2023 is a lot more expensive and a lot wider than it used to be. A lot wider. Even the last 20, over the last 20 years, the black population in the neighborhood dropped from 74.9 to 40%. The white population went from 2.4 to 32. It makes me wonder, where do the people go when they've been pushed out of their neighborhoods they lived in for generations? You know, where was Miss Beverly, the retired school teacher? See, like, one of the things that, like, critical race theory does is embrace, it gets you to embrace race consciousness. So suddenly he's looking around his gym every time he goes in there, trying to figure out how many people of what given race there are in the situation. You know, like, how many black people are there? You know, this is the kind of thing you become cognizant of constantly, you know, and you go into it with a confirmation bias. Like, you need to find racism under every single rock, and you've been taught that that's where it's all hiding. You know, so you will find it everywhere. It reminds me of the girls at the gym who are taking videos of themselves trying to catch a guy who might glance at them for a moment. You know, but anyway, thoughts of these people being pushed out had simmered and percolated into deep resentments with no easy or obvious way to address or direct them. Instead, I got mad at people whose presence reflected the absence of those black bodies. I was mad a lot. You know, and he goes, why are you asking if they have oat milk in a bodega, you dumbass? I caught myself thinking. Do you think I'm going to move out of the way because you're oblivious to the space you're taking up on the sidewalk in the world? Nah, bruh. Now, this is a really important part right here. I liked the anger. It provided access to what I felt like was a superpower, which began with a small flush in my chest and quickly spread to heat up the rest of my body. It was like doing drugs when you're an addict. You know how it's going to end, and you also know one hit will bring what feels like strength to vanquish your fears for a little bit. That's what I was feeling in the gym. This brings me back to the video that I constantly link from John Cleese, when he's pointing out what gets people into extremism is that it makes you feel good. In fact, let's play that real quick.
Seriously, though, we've heard a lot about extremism recently, a nastier, harsher atmosphere everywhere, more abuse and bother boy behavior, less friendliness and tolerance and respect for opponents. All right, but what we never hear about extremism is its advantages. Well, the biggest advantage of extremism is that it makes you feel good because it provides you with enemies. Let me explain. The great thing about having enemies is that you can pretend that all the badness in the whole world is in your enemies and all the goodness in the whole world is in you. Attractive, isn't it? So, if you have a lot of anger and resentment in you anyway, and you therefore enjoy abusing people, then you can pretend that you're only doing it because these enemies of yours are such very bad persons. And that if it wasn't for them, you'd actually be good-natured and courteous and rational all the time. So, if you want to feel good, become an extremist. Okay.
So we can watch the rest of that another time, but like it comes back to what this is about. I liked the anger. It provided access to what felt like a superpower. In other words, he enjoys being a guy who goes around through life looking for, you know, enemies that he can feel angry at and embrace that rage addiction. I call people rage addicts all the time. You know, and he goes, I looked at the man at the that the gym employee confronted just minutes ago. I saw the mask slide past his lower lip. Hey, didn't she tell you to put your fucking mask on? I was somehow off the Stairmaster, standing next to the man and speaking in a volume I had never used. So he goes over there to get in the guy's face over it. You know, and we can get into the points about whether or not masks were important or not later, because that'll become relevant later as we review this article. But again, he's a rage addict. He enjoys this. His extremism has provided him with enemies. And that way he has this, you know, self-righteous belief that he's entitled at that point, you know, to go around abusing people, and that it gives him permission to do so, and even allows him to believe that what he is doing is virtuous. And that's how rage addiction really works. He goes, I expected, wanted, and needed an apology for so much, like just being white and existing in his gym that he thinks has too many white people in it now. Instead, I got a version of the glance he'd given the employee. I wasn't about to let it end like that, but then I saw past him to the mirror behind the treadmills. I looked crazy. Yeah, because you were fucking crazy. You were racist. You were driven by this hatred of this guy because he just dared to exist in your gym while being white. This is racism. This is why I pointed out in the other video, you know, the one, this one specifically, because the Jane Elliott experiment showed that you can cause hatred in people just by telling them that they're divided, by telling them that they're different people, by explaining to them why you should feel, you know, a problem with those people, even if there was nothing that led you to that conclusion before. Like, you can literally just tell them, well, you should hate all the white people. Here's why you should hate all the white people. You know, and it's just like, well, here's why you should hate all the green-eyed versus brown-eyed people. You know, that was what her experiment was about. And the funny thing is now she's totally woke. And, you know, obviously anti-white woke. And she doesn't realize that her experiment could literally be done on any group of people. It wouldn't matter what race or gender or whatever they were. In fact, her experiment was done on all white kids. And she still got the same effect. So it's not racially motivated. It's basically people kind of activating a tribalist instinct that exists within all of us. And that's what colorblindness was supposed to do, was to basically kind of disintegrate that. If you want to get people to not be tribalist, because essentially racism is just another form of tribalism in a lot of ways, you don't do it by going out of your way to spend all of your time, you know, analyzing and looking around for people based entirely upon something stupid like their skin color. But anyway, let's get back to the article. You know, anyway, he's like, he looks in, you know, because again, he was looking in the mirror, he looks crazy. He's like, how did I become this person? I asked myself. Yeah, he's probably an asshole, but gyms are full of assholes. So what? The difference is he was an asshole and a gentrifier, and I needed to separate myself from him and what he told me about myself. So one of the things that I keep talking about is how it's interesting that the racial activist movements seem to just be kind of going in a direction where they can undo the civil rights movement one thing at a time. And that's how they're convincing people of color, well, no, you see, segregation would be better. You should have segregation, and that will make you free. So that's why he's in a situation where he's mentally thinking to himself and analyzing how this white person should not be allowed in his neighborhood, and that the presence of the white person at all is an oppression. You know, anyway, he's like, they were at the gym, the markets, and the cafes. I saw them because I was in those same spaces, sometimes one of the few black people there. There were no Miss Beverly sitting across from me inside here, and it could feel like crossing a racial picket line in order to order a latte. This is what I mean about racial consciousness from CRT. You're going to find yourself just walking around analyzing the race of literally everybody around you. And I remember this because, like, I would have to deal with stupid arguments about racism, on my show, and then I would go to the boxing gym with my kids, which is like a completely diverse environment. That before all of that nonsense, I wouldn't even be thinking about the race of anybody in the room. And instead, now because I've had to deal with this kind of nonsense, I'm suddenly seeing, oh, well, the boxing trainer is black, and then this kid is black, and this kid's Arabic. You know, like, and I wouldn't even have thought about any of that before. And that's because of the fact that I'm not trying to, you know, place any kind of value or hierarchy upon what someone's race is. That's supposed to be what defeating racism was all about. You know, but anyway, you know, he goes, I remember when an older black woman joined me on the street as I was reading the outdoor menu of a new restaurant. Nice, she said. Too bad it's not for us people, right? I laughed along with her, trying to hide my embarrassment that I was excited to try the food. I felt like a sellout, a black guy from a mostly white Massachusetts town still trying to straddle two lines of his identity. You know, and that's just it, his identity. Why is your race your primary way of identifying yourself? Whose idea was that? Because that sounds like a pretty racist idea. The whole concept, something that was actually working, was the idea that we're all one race. But that's not how these people operate, you know. And he goes on to give some other descriptions of things. But, you know, in the long run, you know, oh, yeah, this is what I wanted to get to, which was after the treadmill interaction, I thought about another gym incident, also regarding a mask, a few months before. I was in the weight room when I heard, hey, bro, can you put your mask over your nose? The black guy on the butterfly machine looked over at the white guy talking to him. Nah, I'm good. So this is the same argument, an argument about masks and who's wearing them. But this instance, a black guy is not wearing his mask properly. He goes, the black guy on the butterfly machine looked over at the white guy talking to him. He goes, nah, I'm good. And he goes, huh? You do know there's a pandemic, right? The white guy asked. No response. The black guy went back to pulling those bands and breathing heavily. Now you know what it's like to be ignored, I thought at the same time, because of course he did. It escalated into an adrenaline-fueled argument, and a black staffer was asked to intervene. Quote, could you tell him to put his mask on? It's the fucking rule in the gym, the white guy said. I knew the conflict going on in the staff member's head. How can I side against another black person in this space? They averted their eyes and walked away. See, this is shit he's inventing in his head. Like, he believes that this guy is thinking along racial lines, because, of course, everyone needs to be thinking along racial lines at all times. Anyway, he says, I had barely talked to the other black guy in all of the years I'd seen him around, but now we looked at each other slowly and slowly nodded. You know, because why did I act like that then and now had a completely opposite reaction? It made no sense, except it did. The anger was also a deflection from all the ways I still prioritize whiteness. So, in other words, it wasn't about the mask in either situation. It was about the race of the people involved. That's what created that conflict. Literally nothing else. It was the race of the person involved and had nothing to do with whether or not there was a pandemic or a mask on or anything. And, you know, and he basically doesn't realize he looked crazy was probably the most accurate thing that he had thought this entire time. You know, but this is what comes out of the situation when you start to make race the center of everything and start to go into every social interaction hoping to find proof of your oppression. And the reason why is because he's addicted. You know, that's he was addicted. He loved the anger, you know, that, you know, he's like, I was mad a lot, right? And of course he's like, because I liked the anger. It provided access to what I felt like was a superpower. So again, this is the reaction directly to people being told and bombarded constantly that, you know, this other group is their oppressor. This other group is the brown-eyed or the green-eyed or the blue-eyed group. And you're supposed to hate them. And they're, you know, at the core of all of your problems. And you should go into every social interaction looking with confirmation bias for evidence of that fact, instead of trying to just treat people like human beings. So, you know, the fact that this got printed in the Huffington Post, and this guy basically just did it to, you know, when I, like I said, when I started this article, when I saw the name of it, I was hoping, especially when he says, how did I become this person? I asked myself, you know, and he reflected even on it and said, I looked crazy when he saw himself in the mirror. But he, this article is just further justification of the racial bias that he himself has put into himself, that now he goes into every situation looking to figure out how he is being racially oppressed in it, no matter what the circumstances are. And again, all of this just leads to more racism, because do you think that any of the white people that he's going to interact with like that, you know, are going to be less inclined to be racist after they have that interaction with him? No, they're not. And again, if you watch this video, and I'll put it in the end of the cards, this isn't just a matter of opinion. This was scientifically understood for a long time. You can't try, you can't, if you want to dismantle things like racism and bigotry, it has to be done like a bomb. You have to kind of humanize, you know, all parties in question. And then, you know, once people kind of start to all think of each other as the same tribe, then all of these problems go away. But it's abundantly clear that whoever it is that's pushing the buttons on racial activism, gender activism, you know, LGBTQ activism, etc., is not interested in us feeling like one tribe. Whether it's through the grifting, you know, people like Ibram X. Kendi recently gets caught, you know, essentially getting an enormous amount of money and keeping it all for himself and laying off all of his employees. You know, there's grifting, but also there's just a need for division. And that's what I'm hoping to fight. But at the end of the day, ironically, it's the people that are supposedly fighting to end all oppression that are literally, they're fighting the fire by pouring gasoline on it. And that's one of the things that further bothers me about this, is as I pointed out in this video, was that the social sciences have understood this for a long time. And where does most of this racial activist bullshit come from? The social sciences. Thanks for tuning in. I will have some more content coming up. I'm going to comment a little bit on Israel-Palestine and a bunch of other things that recently popped up. I'm sorry again about not having any content for a while. I I've told you guys this before, I have to do the right things in my life to be the kind of guy that you want me to be on the show, you know, making these videos. And I had a death in the family, among other stressors at home, and that would have made it very difficult for me to do so. But I'm back on the clock now. I want to thank everybody who's supported the show on Patreon and other places. You know, and make sure you go to my hy.page/vradio, which I'll also link in the description so you guys can find it, to find me on other social media, my Discord channel, etc. Thanks again.